Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt, live on the line from California. I'm John Manuel from World Headquarters here in Durham, North Carolina. I want to thank you for being here on the Baseball America College podcast, whether you download it at iTunes or subscribe to Baseball America's feed or download it from our website. We have so much to get into every college baseball season, Aaron. Obviously, we love the college podcast and the college game, but a little bit champing and chomping at the bit as we got out to ballparks this weekend. And did you get your college baseball fix even with the rain that came to Southern California this weekend?
Yeah, it ended up working out pretty well. Had a nice doubleheader on Sunday between Vanderbilt and San Diego. And even Friday when the forecast was really bad, caught five innings down there. And Saturday, again, forecast was dicey and managed to get in nine between North Carolina and Fullerton. So all in all, went all right.
Well, pretty great weekend here weather-wise at North Cackalack. I saw parts of a couple of games, did not actually get out to see Canisius and Toledo and Creighton, as I'd hoped, over in Cary. Instead, went over to Raleigh, Elon, and North Carolina State. Aaron, as you said, you went to several games. And the first thing that was noticeable, even though we'd both been to some fall practices and we'd seen the bats, the new bats before, just seen them in games, and now they've been, players have gotten used to them a little bit. It's going to take some getting used to going to games because the sound off the bat is different, Aaron. And that was really brought home to me in the Friday game I went to when Kyle Rasmus of Elon hit a three-run homer off Corey Mazzoni. It was a 92-mile-an-hour fastball, and Rasmus got all of it, turned on that pitch, showed a really quick bat. But it was almost silent off the bat. I mean, it's like he struck it so hard, there was no ping. There was very little ping at all. And two batters later, there was a drag bunt. It was a very loud, kind of old-school college baseball ping. So the bats are clearly different. What was your take on the first weekend around the country? Did the bats make an impact? And what was your firsthand observation of the bats there in SoCal?
A lot of people are saying, well, James Madison scored 92 runs this weekend. Mikey Mata hit four home runs. Clearly the bats are overblown. I don't agree. I mean, I think you're taking a few isolated incidents. And I think, frankly, wind played a factor. James Madison, I know it played a pretty big factor there. Not to take away from what they did. I mean, 92 runs in four games is insane. But on the whole, I think offense was down. I think games were a lot quicker. I just saw Chuck Dunlap with the SEC sent something out about how quickly their games went this weekend. Mississippi State had three games that were almost 2 hours flat. Home runs, I think, were generally down. One thing that struck me also, I was talking with a scout on Sunday, and he observed, how shallow the outfielders were playing. They're really cheating in a lot, and he thinks that could lead to a lot more doubles and triples this year. And also he said that the new bats make it a lot easier for scouts to evaluate players more fairly and get a better idea for how good the guys are, because the good players, everyone seems to agree, the good players really stand out with these bats.
Yeah, it's impressive. I think the thing you noted that the scout talked about is the whole reason why we did so much of the college preview issue focused on defense. That's the area of the game, I think, that's going to change the most in college baseball, the positioning of defenders. I mean, a few years ago, Aaron, we had, we went to one of the ABCA conventions where they talked about, I'm not sure if you even, this might be before your tenure began, where they moved the second base umpire back because they were basically afraid of these umpires getting crushed by line drives. And the second base umpire used to play in front of second base, I think, when nobody was on. And they moved them about 20 feet back behind the bag to give them more reaction time. So that's how hot the bats used to be, and I bet you're going to, if you see that change, the positioning of the umpires, not to mention the players, you're just talking about a different game, and that lets you know that people in the game, or involved in the game, know something is different. And the other thing that was most noticeable to me on that Kyle Rasmus home run, I forget who was playing left field for NC State, but he read it off the bat that it was gone. Now, I wasn't in the press box, I was behind home plate. I saw the swing was a vicious swing, so I thought, wow, there's no sound, but I thought that ball was struck pretty well. When I went in the press box about an inning later, guys in the press box all thought that was not a home run off the bat, and that's because of the sound. I'm convinced it was because of the sound. Because if you were outside and you heard the sound was the only thing that made you think, oh, it wasn't struck hard. But the left fielder knew. the players knew. So the players, you can tell, the players and the coaches know something's different. So the rest of us should take their word for it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
That's how I took it. But the great players are still going to stand out. And this weekend, in a refreshing happening, the best team stood out, Aaron, and the best teams all played well. Very little movement at the top of the top 25 rankings. Florida, with a pretty dominating performance against South Florida to sweep our number one team, goes undefeated. They won 18 straight home games going back to last year. That streak is intact. Garrett Whittle's streak, no longer intact. We'll get to that later. Out of those top five, six, seven teams, we only made one move in the rankings there, and even that was a tough call. Vanderbilt at four, moving up to three over TCU. What are those top five, six, seven teams stuck out the most to you?
Well, I mean, the one I saw, Vanderbilt. I mean, you know, I think they're as good as advertised. I saw them three games this weekend, and the fact that Grayson Garvin started the fourth of those games and carried a perfect game into the seventh. I mean, he's going to have a great year. He can really, really pitch. They've got so much pitching depth. I mean, Jack Armstrong wasn't even available this weekend, but it didn't stop them. And I like their lineup a lot. I think, you know, Tony Kemp and Mike Yastrzemski at the top against right-handed pitchers. Yastrzemski goes down in the order against lefties, but, you know, Brian Johns moved up to that two hole against lefties, and he played pretty well. So, you know, they've got guys at the top. I really like Esposito and Westlake in the middle of the lineup. I think the lineup has pretty good balance and depth. I mean, I think that they're a very solid, complete team all the way around. But the reason that we moved them over TCU this week was because it was a 4-0 week on the West Coast versus a 2-1 week at home. And I don't think TCU necessarily deserved to move down. Most weeks they would stay right where they are. But in this case, I think what Vanderbilt did was just more impressive to the point that we thought we could reward Vanderbilt.
Really a dime's worth of difference between 3 and 4. And, you know, one team went 4-0 on the road. One team went 2-1 at home. Like you said, it's not so much a punishment of TCU. But and I think it also needs to be said here, you saw Vanderbilt in person. You said you thought about this, but really it was the rest of us who kind of pushed for Vanderbilt to move up. So it wasn't that you were – obviously you were impressed in person, but it didn't – and that it wasn't like you saw him in person, so you wanted to move him up. It was the rest of us who were had to convince you a little bit. The other interesting thing, I think, from this weekend was I think we all know UCLA can pitch. For UCLA to give up no earned runs, one unearned run all weekend, Adam Plutko, who I think we knew had the potential to be good, really flashed, you know, first-round potential last year in high school but wasn't consistent. That's a ridiculous weekend. I mean, I don't care what the bats were like. I would like to see UCLA score more than 8 runs, but USF's a good, representative, solid program. But to give up one unearned run in 3 games over the weekend is impressive for the Bruins.
The crazy thing is, most weekends this year, if UCLA scores 8 runs, they're probably going to do pretty well. I mean, their pitching is absurdly good. There's no other way to put it.
I think you're right. And also, one other note that I scribbled down was Oklahoma beating William & Mary. You know, William & Mary was second in the CAA last year in ERA, of a 4.87 ERA. And Oklahoma, you know, scored a decent amount of runs, obviously more as they got past, I forget the name of William & Mary's Friday starter. He's a junior. He's got a chance to be drafted in the, you know, 8th to 15th round kind of range. It's pretty good. I wish I could remember his name. But the point is, that's an impressive weekend for Oklahoma. I mean, I think, obviously, we think highly of the Sooners. They're 5th. But they dismantled a pretty good William & Mary team. They put up a lot of runs in doing so. So a good start for those guys.
I think Matt Davenport is the pitcher you're looking for.
Thank you. Mary. Mr. Davenport, that's his name. I knew I could not remember it. We did have a little movement after South Carolina. And Cal State Fullerton's second year in a row, they start 1-2. You saw a little bit of that in the game that you saw was North Carolina going out there and winning. And the Tar Heels, who were not ranked coming into the season, coming off a, you know, disappointing season last year, was there. When you go to Omaha 4 years in a row, you raise the bar for your expectations. And then, you know, North Carolina, kind of a tumultuous offseason. They lose Brian Goodwin, probably their most talented player, who transfers to Miami-Dade Junior College after being suspended for a violation of, was it school policy or team policy?
School policy.
School policy. So he transfers to a junior college. No matter, North Carolina, with an impressive weekend out on the West Coast again, Aaron, going out and beating 4 regional caliber teams. There might only be one other regional team they play this weekend in Fullerton. You know, we'll see about Missouri, Poly, USC.
I think Cal Poly's pretty good. I think they've got a chance at a regional too.
But that's four wins for North Carolina and kind of four different ways of doing it. What prompted the Tar Heel uprising this weekend?
Well, you know, I think their bullpen was pretty key in the first two games. I mean, really, their pitching as a whole was very good those first two games. They got good starts from Chris Munley and Patrick Johnson. And, you know, like I wrote on the college blog this weekend, is really a bunch of unheralded guys that stepped forward in the bullpen. And guys are going to be pretty good. You know, this is, I think, their deepest bullpen they've had in a while, potentially, because for the first time in a while, they've got a lot of different looks. They can kind of mix and match the way that, you know, the way that NC State could a couple of years ago when they won the regional, for instance.
Yep.
You know, this bullpen's constructed a little bit similarly. You know, you've got kind of a low slot lefty, you've got more of a power lefty, you've got power righties, you know, different looks there. I mean, the guy that I never really even heard of that looked very good was Cody Penny. I mean, he was outstanding against Fullerton to close that game out in the 11th inning. You know, struck out, I think it was Anthony Hutting with a 94-mile-an-hour fastball on the black. You know, I mean, when you got guys like that taking steps forward, I think it's a credit to the job they've done developing pitchers there. And Scott Forbes does a really good job with their pitchers. And then they came out on Sunday and they hit, and they scored 22 runs in two games. So I had just been saying to myself on Saturday, well, their pitching looks pretty good, but I don't think they're going to score a lot of runs. And then they came out and they scored some runs. So give them credit.
Yeah, good weekend. They obviously earned their way into the top 25 rankings this week. The Titans moved down a little bit, Aaron, but it didn't seem like Fullerton played too poorly. They got a lot of hits. They pitched pretty well. Didn't seem like they got a lot of timely hits, a lot of runners left on base. What was your first take on the Titans off to a 1-2 start for the second straight year?
I think they're going to be just fine. In fact, I think they're going to be really, really good. But, you know, Dave Serrano was very disappointed in his team on Saturday, and you know how much he expects from his team and demands from his team. And, you know, he was pretty frank about his disappointment after they lost that game to North Carolina.
But, 26 runners left on base in their last two, in those two losses is kind of egregious. The kind of thing that you're not going to be successful doing that if you do that all year.
Yeah, and he was not pleased with that. He thought that his entire offense was out of character for itself and wasn't, you know, didn't play the way that they had prepared all season and all that kind of stuff. But personally, I mean, I think their offense is going to be very good. I like Richie Pedroza and Anthony Hutting at the top. Really like Nick Ramirez and Carlos Lopez in the middle. I think it's a little softer in the bottom part of the lineup, but they should be able to manufacture runs like they always do. And their pitching is really good. I mean, you know, again, it's very deep, and we've written about it before. They're going to be just fine. They really are.
Yeah, they seem obviously we had them eight for a reason. The biggest movers in our rankings this week, Aaron, were both in this area. As you're listening to the Baseball America College podcast, Stanford moves up five spots from 13, replacing Fullerton at number eight, and number nine, UConn, preseason number nine, moves down five spots, down to 14. So we have the Huskies, who went 1-2 in the Big East Big Ten Challenge. Stanford, the Cardinal, a very young club, loaded in the freshman and sophomore classes, coming off back-to-back spectacular recruiting classes. Stanford goes down to Rice and stares down the Owls' freshman right-handers, John Sims and Aaron Kubica, who both played very well, both pitched very well, and beats Anthony Rendon and the Owls. Where do you want to go there first? Do you want to talk Stanford winning at Rice first, Aaron, or UConn kind of limping out of the gate, as you wrote?
Well, let's talk about Stanford and Rice, because that was the marquee series this weekend, and I think it lived up to its billing. I mean, I think both those teams played well, especially on the mound. You know, I mean, that was one thing that jumped out to me was Rice, even in losing the series, got three strong starting pitching performances from three, you know, exciting power arms with John Sims and Matthew Reckling and Austin Kubica. Those guys played well, and that's very encouraging for Rice's future. I mean, ordinarily we wouldn't move Rice down four spots for losing a home series. It just so happens this week that the four teams right behind them all went undefeated this weekend and played very well, and you know, Rice was at home. So I mean, it's I don't think it's an indictment of Rice or their weekend or their talent. On the whole, like I said, I was pretty impressed with Rice, and I think as Anthony Rendon kind of finds his rhythm, you know, and the guys around him, Rattery, Rathjen, and Shagua, I mean, those guys will have much better weekends than they had this weekend. So Nothing to worry about with Rice, but I do think you have to credit Stanford. I mean, they're young. You know, they played seven underclassmen in the lineup this weekend, but they're so talented, and it's very good to see freshmen like Austin Wilson coming out of the gate and hitting 500 and hitting a home run the first weekend. That's incredibly encouraging, I think, for Stanford. The fact that they pitch very well without Brett Mooneyham, who's, you know, one of their guys that they're leaning on in the rotation, you'd think. Jordan Preece didn't really pitch much this weekend. I don't know if he pitched at all. I know he's going to start on Tuesday against Cal. And again, he's been their Friday guy in the past. So Mark Appel, looks like he can handle that move from the bullpen to the Friday job. And he's got a chance to be dominant in that role.
Yeah, they really pitched around some adversity with, you know, two, like you said, just two of the guys that you would have expected, two guys who pitched a lot of weekend innings for them last year, do not pitch this weekend, and they win a series on the road against the top 25 team. Pretty impressive, and I agree with you. I think Rice, most weekends when Austin, as you corrected me, Austin Kubica, John Sims, those guys, when they're starting pitching, is that good? They're going to win a lot of games in Conference USA. If they pitch like that, you know, Chase McDowell's a guy they had pretty big expectations for, had a nice summer in the Alaska League last year, didn't have a great weekend this weekend, but I think more often than not, Rice is going to win series when they pitch the way they pitched this weekend against Stanford. On the flip side, you had UConn, Aaron, really with one bad loss, losing to Purdue. I think at the same time, that's another one where we expect, usually Elliott Glenn, their senior left-hander, is going to and do a little bit better than that. Everybody has their off days. I don't think us moving UConn down was necessarily that we don't believe in UConn anymore. It's just a matter of anyone 1-2 on the opening weekend and other teams behind them 1.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, the Purdue's okay. I mean, you know, they're not a bad team, but you can't get blown out by Purdue. You know, I think part of that was rush. I mean, UConn, I think, made four errors that led to 400 runs that day. Glenn didn't get hammered, you know, but it was his first start of the year. Coming out of the gate, I mean, those guys have been playing in a gym all winter long. You know, they've got 4 feet of snow on the ground, so. I can give UConn a little bit of a mulligan, but at the same time, we were fairly aggressive with our ranking of them, and it's a northern team, and the teams behind them all did play well. I mean, Virginia had a really good weekend down there at Auburn, so I think it's fair to move Virginia up ahead of UConn at this point and see what happens.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. Virginia having a very good weekend. Again, these things don't happen in a vacuum, so people, you know, I think it's important to remember that. And like you said, Glenn didn't get hammered. 6 of those 10 runs that Purdue scored were in the last 2 innings. That game was It's like they got annihilated in that game. It was a game that got changed late. And let's remind people that Purdue's Fred has a freshman this year who's the son of Arky Cianfrocco. You know, Angelo Cianfrocco. I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, Arky Cianfrocco was pretty cool for people of my age. We remember Arky Cianfrocco as one of the most fun players we ever covered or not covered, watched in the late 80s, early 90s with the Expos and Padres. Just a great name.
It is a great name. And by the way, you mentioned Glenn. It's also worth mentioning that Matt Barnes pitched very well on Saturday. You know, he struck out 11 guys in that loss to a good Minnesota team.
And we have some good coverage of the Big East Big Ten Challenge on the college blog from some correspondents, Greg Allman and Joel Poiley, some veteran newspaper guys down in South Florida, Tampa area. And they seem pretty impressed just with that event. And Greg covered the Big East Big Ten, the Big East tournament, I should say, last year. For the St. Pete paper, and is pretty familiar with Big East baseball. And just some encouraging signs, I think, you know, Louisville pitched really well, played very well down there. And I loved your tweet this morning, Aaron, about Michigan State. Michigan State got off to a great start last year and kind of just fell just short toward the end of the year of being a regional club, maybe challenging that Big Ten, challenging Minnesota. They look primed to challenge Minnesota again. And that's a program that's trending up in the Big Ten, there's no doubt.
No question. I mean, Jake Voss has won everywhere he's gone since he left Michigan. I mean, he spent, I think, one season at Eastern Michigan, and they went to regionals. And they were good last year at Michigan State. I've got them as the number 2 team in the Big Ten this year. John, I think you do also, do you not?
I believe that's where we ended up with Michigan State number 2. I mean, it's a talented, experienced roster. I mean, look, they're going to pitch on paper. It's just an impressive club. And, you know, Minnesota got the short end of the stick in that event. I mean, they really, scheduling-wise, did they play St. John's, Louisville, and UConn in succession?
Yeah.
I mean, the Golden Gopher just had it tough. And they still went. They went 1-2 in that. Obviously, dealt UConn a loss. But I think you know. I still think we think Minnesota's the class of that league. But Michigan State has a chance, I think, to make a run in that conference. And I like the way that you just put that. They, you know, just keep them in the back of your head that that's a potential regional team. And as you watch Big Ten baseball this year, that's a team that's as likely as any other to jump up a little bit.
Yeah.
And the rest of the top 25, Aaron. We moved Tulane out. Not necessarily that Tulane did anything wrong. I guess the only other surprise really is just as usual early in the season, there are a lot of teams we wanted to rank that we weren't able to rank. From outside the top 25, what was the most impressive results in your mind?
Well, you got to give James Madison credit for scoring 92 runs in four games. I mean, it's, like I said, the wind was howling out, but nonetheless, that's a lot of offense. I mean, I love the stat that James Madison sent out. There's a bunch of good stats you can pick from, but they equaled a third of their 2010 home run production in four games.
Wow.
They hit 23 home runs this weekend. They also equaled 20% of their entire run production from last year in those four games. I mean,
you're kidding.
No, it's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. That's amazing. I'm glad they sent those out. And that's with the son of the coach, Tyler McFarland, only going 4-for-11. David Herbeck seems like he's been there since Ken Herbeck was playing. But David Herbeck with 5 home runs this weekend for the Dukes.
He does feel like he's been there a while, doesn't he? It's funny. They're an experienced veteran team. I mean, I think that they're the team to beat in the CAA, and I don't think they're a top 25 team yet. I want to see more. I want to see a larger sample size. But boy, they could be pretty good.
I think we actually may have picked Georgia State over them in that conference, but that was a toss up conference. It would not surprise me if Georgia State took a little bit of a step backwards this year, but they are a club I think that's going to be affected by the bats more than most. They're more of a mashing team, whereas James Madison has a little bit more athleticism. They stole 16 bags this weekend. I love it when teams are hitting home runs left and right and still steal a bunch of bases. I mean, that's kind of random. You noted on our worksheet, Portland going on the road, sweeping Middle Tennessee State. That's going to be Portland had a nice year last year. I believe Chris Sperry is the head coach there, is he not? Is that his name?
Yes, that's right.
And he's done a nice job with that program. And they just a program that's just quietly kind of under the radar, just an upward trend with the Pilots. You had Wichita State sweeping a series this weekend. Elon winning a series, road series with NC State. But winning the clincher on the road in Raleigh yesterday, those were some that jumped out to me. And also Kansas State, Aaron, you write every year. Kansas State lost a lot of guys. Hard to see them coming back and being as good. But, again, another coach who just – that program just grinds things out over at Kansas State with Coach Hill. I mean, they were really not on the map as a program. Then Brad Hill gets there from Central Missouri, and they're a regional contender every year.
Yeah, last 2 years they've actually been in regionals, and I think it was the first time they'd ever been in a regional 2 years ago. Give that staff a lot of credit. Them and Washington State are two programs that to me just seem like mirror images of each other. Just blue collar teams, always seem to be a little bit under the radar and just win. And Washington State didn't have a great weekend. They lost the middle game down at Cal State Bakersfield, but they still went 2-1 against the warm weather team. Those are teams to keep an eye on. I think. I like UC Irvine, and they clobbered Nevada in three games. You mentioned Louisville, 3-0 down there, beating Michigan, Ohio State, and Minnesota. Obviously Coastal Carolina is right on the cusp. They had a pretty good weekend despite a 16-inning loss to Indiana. Hawaii, I have to mention Hawaii. They won the first two games of that series against Oregon, a very good Oregon team. They got one hit on Sunday, and we'll see what happens on Monday. If they win that Monday game, I think it's pretty likely they'll be in the rankings next week, depending on their series next week, which I think is tough because they have a tough schedule. But
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Hawaii is a team to watch on, to keep an eye on.
No one's got that tougher schedule than Stanford. Three straight weekends on the road against good teams. Is next weekend Texas for Stanford?
No, actually, Texas is at Hawaii next weekend.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Stanford goes to Vanderbilt next weekend,
That's
and then
it.
They go to Texas.
That's it. At Rice, at Vanderbilt, at Texas. I love Mark Marcus's quip to you on Thursday or Wednesday in the weekend preview. He was like, "Well, I guess we'll find out, you know, if that was too much. We'll find out soon." But it wasn't intended to be three straight road series, but the Texas series had to be flip flop. So they're at Texas, and you know, that's a baptism by fire for all those young players with the Cardinal. Aaron, I guess another big story of the weekend for college baseball is the story that wasn't really Garrett Whittles, a Florida International, who went hitless on Friday. Now, as I was perusing my DirecTV Sunday morning, looking to see if any college baseball was on Sunday afternoon, I did see that Florida International Southeastern Louisiana was scheduled to be on Sunday, and I guess Robin Ventura would have been there had that been the game where Whittles could have broken his consecutive hit streak record, but Whittles goes hitless on Friday. The Lions break his streak. What's your takeaway, I guess, on the whole Garrett Whittles 56-game hit streak and it ending you know, so quickly this weekend?
It certainly seemed a little bit anticlimactic. There was a lot of build-up there. It was a long wait for an 0-for-4.
That's right.
But, you know, it was the whole – the situation starting the whole thing was awkward, you know, and there were a lot of columns. I saw a couple of pieces in the Miami Herald saying that the school should have suspended Whittles until – until the rape investigation in the Bahamas was cleared up, and you know there's some precedent for that. I mean, there's other the column that I read listed a lot of other cases where players were suspended until those kind of proceedings were resolved, and it's not necessarily a presumption of guilt, but you know, also remember that the standard the burden of proof, I guess, is different than in the court of law. I mean, this isn't a court of law.
Right.
You don't have to be innocent until proven guilty. You have to not put yourself in position to be in these kind of situations. And who knows? You know, I'm not saying Garrett Whittles necessarily did anything wrong or not. We don't know. But you know, whether the university did the right thing or not by playing him, it's not for me to say. But it certainly was an awkward situation for everybody.
I think that's a very fair way to put it. And I think you're right. There's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law, but suspending him, holding him out. You don't, and you're not saying he's guilty. You're just saying let's sort things out a little bit here and figure out what happened. But you know, he went one for the weekend. He had one hit on the entire weekend, and a disappointing weekend I think for Florida International. And Southeastern Louisiana is another program to kind of watch as a bit of under the radar, you know, solid Southland Conference program in a league that's going to change significantly next year. All the conference shifting that's going on. That's just another one to watch, but it was too bad for college baseball in a way, because you would have had college baseball on TV in February. That's the only way that they were going to get college baseball on TV in February. But in a way, I'm almost glad it didn't happen, because then, like you said, the whole thing was a little bit awkward with this offseason charge hanging over his head. Aaron, what do we have to look forward to next week? And what's your schedule kind of look like? Who will you be seeing in person both this week and then next weekend?
Well, I've got Arizona's coming to town next weekend to Long Beach State. I'll try to get a look at those guys. The MLB Urban Youth Invitational is next weekend up in Compton. Probably going to get a look at Peter O'Brien from Bethune-Cookman, and you know, a pretty solid Bethune-Cookman club all the way around. And then in 2 weeks, I'll be going to the Minute Maid Friday and Saturday, and then I'll see Stanford and Texas finale on Sunday. So it should be an action-packed couple of weeks.
It does sound like an action-packed couple of weeks. I think our best bet around here is, well, we have, you know, what's the name of the shortstop again at Seton Hall?
A.J. Rusbarski.
We're going to get a little A.J. Rusbarski, your most efficient defender in the country over at Chapel Hill this weekend. But I think a little slightly better college baseball schedule and smorgasbord on hand for you down in Southern California. So it's exciting to have you out there to cover the season this year, and I'm glad we had the first podcast in the books, and looking forward to the rest of the year.
Me too, John. It's always good to have the first weekend in the books, like you said, and I think it was an exciting first weekend. You know, I think it's good that a lot of the teams that we expected to be good got off to good starts, and there were a few surprises as always, which is always welcome as well.
I always kind of thought of the bats almost like as a 3-point shot. You know, the bats, you know, make mediocre players better, and the bats are a leveler. You know, the best teams usually get the best pitchers. Anybody can get guys who can hit okay. You know, your your college second baseman who can't run, who's not a great athlete but can hit. To me, the bats were always a leveler. Kind of like, again, like a 3-point shot in basketball when it was first introduced in 1987. So we'll see what happens with these bats, but so far, we can tell they're going to have an impact. And it's going to storyline we'll watch all year. Baseball America and baseballamerica.com. So for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We thank you for joining us here on the College Baseball Podcast at Baseball America. We'll see you next Monday. So long, everybody.